Warning, the hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
All right. Thank you, Al. Al, back with us again this week. I have to say, I'm a little worried about Al. He's been going around the Entitled Town offices just like tripping people all day because he saw that football game yesterday, and he's like, no, this is what a trip is. And he is he went to Iron Mike Irons, my co-host, here on Entitled Town. I'm Dave Brown. I'm here with Mike. And he's, like, tripping Mike just to show, like, what a real, quote-unquote real, he uses air quotes, too, trip is.
And you can even throw a flag.
He's got a flag with him. And he's like, and he throws it on himself, like, that's what a trip should be. And I'm just like, Al. It doesn't have to be intentional. That's what the rules say. The call on Frederick was a fair call because he lifted up his leg. It impeded, the best word there is obstructed, Hightower's progress as Hightower's trying to get by him. And it doesn't really matter if it was intentional or not, or if it looked like a trip or not. And it's one of those things where I bet you the refs were looking for something like that. They were probably looking for tripping, and that's probably why they called it twice yesterday. Which is a bit of a rare call, but Mike, I'm glad to have you here. What did you think about the tripping calls yesterday? You think that they unfairly gave this game to the Patriots?
Al threw a flag on me for unsportsmanlike conduct when I pointed out to him that he had the same opinion as mittens wearing dullard Ben Volen had, who led his story today with, or should say his headline was, "Rare tripping calls help derail Cowboys." That's what you take away from the game?
Well, we all know Al is very reasonable. So perhaps there's some merit to what Penn is saying.
No, there's less than no merit to something that Volen's coming across. I don't know how you can watch that game yesterday and see the disparity in terms of preparation, coaching, ball security. The Cowboys play in the NFC East. They have to play on the road in Washington, Philadelphia, and New York, and they look like they had never set foot in a weather-adverse environment. It was remarkable.
Yeah, and I'd say, I mean, I think both teams struggled a little bit with the weather yesterday. The Patriots were obviously and clearly more prepared for it, but it was a catch where the Myers made where the ball popped out on a great hit by the Cowboys safety. And, a totally fair, clean play, that just a great football play, and the ball popped out, and you wonder if the ball was dry. Maybe it's not as doesn't come loose there. But a couple plays where players dropped the ball. But I'll say this. As far as the tripping thing goes, I don't think there's any question that a couple of tripping penalties derailed Cowboys' drives. And it's arguable as to whether they were – and when I say it's arguable, I think they were fair calls. But I've talked to a lot of people who don't think that they were fair calls. So I think you can say that those penalties derailed a couple of Cowboys' drives. But looking at all of the evidence in front of us, it seems to me like the Cowboys were well on their way to derailing their own drives. Because that's pretty much what they did throughout the game. They didn't have much success. I would question some of the third and short calls from Jason Garrett, where they threw. And I don't know if Garrett calls the plays there, but they.
Kellen Moore is the offensive coordinator. He calls the plays.
He calls the plays. Okay, but these are coaching decisions to go for. On third and short, when you have what, by the way, I'm looking at the Cowboys yesterday and I'm like, this is the biggest team I've ever seen. They're huge. That offensive line it's a really good line, and they are giants, not like the New York football giants, but they're gigantic men. And Ezekiel Elliott is an outstanding running back who's huge. And so I don't understand, excuse me, Belichick on Wednesday went on and on and on about how good this team is in third and short. Why are you throwing the ball against the best pass defense in the league?
In a weather game.
In a weather game. Just pound it in there. And you know what? Like, if the Patriots can stop you, good for them. But why are you playing into your opponent's strength? I don't understand that. I think the Cowboys did plenty to hurt themselves throughout the game. The Patriots had Nick Folk kick off instead of Jake Bailey. They had Folk do shorter kickoffs a few times, and it led to 3 muffed kick attempts, return attempts by the Cowboys. They recovered all 3, which is a bit of luck. You figure 3 times you drop the ball, you might not come up with all 3 of them. But they did recover, hurt them in field position a little bit. And, you know, you are exactly right. They didn't seem prepared to play in the elements. The Patriots practiced in it. They practiced in it all the time. They practiced in it all week. This is a situation where, let's say the Patriots played in Dallas, right? Let's say that's where they were located. Belichick would have had wet balls out all week. Like, if the weather's good, but we're heading to a place where it's raining, dunk them in a bucket of water, and that's the ball we're going to use in practice. Yeah, so
at least
I think
Tony Dungy back in the day would open the doors in the Hoosier Dome for practice before they played at Foxborough. I mean, that's preparing.
You'd think that's – you can't make it – you can't go ahead and just go ahead and make it 32 degrees in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. That's not going to happen. But – if you're practicing inside, you certainly can lower the temperature if you want, and you can do other things to recreate the conditions or to simulate the conditions, like I just talked about with the wet balls. And the Cowboys, you know, the Patriots defense played really well yesterday. People are losing sight of this. This was the best offense in the NFL, at least in terms of yards gained throughout the season, and DVOA, which is Football Outsiders, does that. It's an efficiency metric, and they were the best team in DVOA coming in. Great, great offensive team all season, and for all the talk we've heard all year about how they haven't played anybody, they haven't played any real quarterbacks. Well, Dak Prescott was on pace for 5,000 yards this year. He's playing as well as anybody, and they completely shut it down. Amari Cooper didn't have a catch. This was a very signature win for the Patriots defense. But it has once again been portrayed as, well, the Patriots benefited from a couple of calls, and the Cowboys beat themselves. And you know what? Somebody just said this. They're talking about this on Twitter. In the NFL, a lot of the times, teams beat themselves. And that's the thing the Patriots most weeks don't do. They let the other team beat themselves. That not making the mistakes is why you win. They made fewer mistakes yesterday. I don't think they turned the ball over, and that's going to help you. You know, that's going to give you a chance to win against a good, pretty good team, which Dallas is. And Dallas is one of those teams that has a lot of talent on the field, but can find a way to lose. They have 5 losses now. It's almost inexplicable. Lost to the Jets, but no, I think you're right. I think to zero in on a couple of penalties, and I just know this. I mean, let me ask you, if the Patriots had lost because of a couple of tripping penalties, do you think that would be the emphasis of the same people who are writing about these penalties helping the Patriots win yesterday?
No, I wouldn't be able to hear you because the goalposts would be moving to the other side. It's penalties are, you referenced them earlier, penalties derail drives. Your own coach should not derail your offense. The Patriots, you made the point about Garrett, they're throwing the ball against the best pass defense in the NFL. The Patriots actually were giving up more yards per rush than they were average pass attempt, which is absurd. And the Cowboys are dreadfully coached, and you're being a Giant fan, you should be happy that Garrett's in the division and should not want him coaching your team first and foremost. The media...
That's the rumor, by the way.
The log rolling by the idiots in the media, we made... we referenced this last week, that there seems to be always a narrative. And in the past week, it was N'Keal Harry, and he's the glorified intern. They take the rest of the media to take their talking points from Felcher. They nail them during the week mindlessly, trolling their audience, trolling their readers. And then I laughed maniacally when Harry scored the touchdown yesterday on a super athletic play, a really, really good play. And getting back to your original point, I'm kind of getting off kilter here.
That's okay. You're touching on things I want to talk about, so keep going.
It's the goalposts moving with the media is just so goddamn stupid. Oh, God. I really don't know how anyone, you know, you're doing something unique. You've set yourself apart with what you're doing, you're writing for the Concord Monitor. There's nothing. There's no original thinking. There's no original thought going on in the media. It's hammer the Patriots, hammer the Patriots. Dave, it's Groundhog Day again.
And we talked about this last week, you know, about this sort of the social contract and how there is this acceptable range of narratives that go in. And I would argue that, you know, it almost doesn't matter who you send to the game. You're going to come back with roughly the same set of stories. Because reporters have just been conditioned over time to react a certain way. And it's not observing what... Yesterday, somebody asked me a question on Twitter. Somebody said they were a journalism student, they're starting sports writing, and they said, what advice do you have? And I said, just say what happened. And they said, can you elaborate on that? And I said, don't say what didn't happen. And it sounds like short, curt, and kind of that I'm not giving this person a real answer, but it is. And that's exactly what you should do, is look at the game and say, what just happened in front of me? And look, those tripping penalties were definitely part of the game, but is that really why the Cowboys lost? Were they playing so great beyond it? Was it a shootout where all of a sudden, like, one tripping penalty cost Dallas its chance to score? No, they had 4 field goal attempts in this game. They were making very conservative choices throughout that turned out to hurt them. And that, to me, like, if you want to talk about, even if you want to shortchange the Patriots on this win, that's where I would do it. I would say, well, the other team played really conservative and cost themselves. So, and they made bizarre choices of going against their strengths and playing into their opponent's strengths. And those are the things that happened on the field. I don't think that the refs gave this game to New England. I think even with those penalties, I mean, they didn't overturn touchdowns, right? So the first tripping call was a pretty big play, but the second one wasn't, was it?
No, there's just not a lot of critical thinking going on. They point to the penalty saying, oh, that's the reason that the Patriots won. It wasn't because they were more prepared. It wasn't because they played situational football. It wasn't that, as you mentioned, they kicked the short looping kickoffs because the Dallas had their guys back. It's not because of the ball security. It's because that penalty. Simplistic. I mean, it's so simple. It's so uninformed. It's not even trolling, Dave. Maybe just a lack of ability to look at things in a bigger picture.
Well, no, so they got Isaiah Wynn back. And I think we saw an immediate difference on the first two plays with four straight runs.
They did. And the same people who were telling us last week that, oh, Isaiah Wynn and N'Keal Harry, they're not going to be the cure for what ails you, are the same people telling us today, right? Oh, well, they ran the ball better because Wynn's back, and N'Keal Harry gives them an option of a big receiver. And Jacoby Myers, who is being derided by the media, comes up with 4 big receptions yesterday, stepped up, kept
yards.
Drives going, ran after almost, the catch. And, you know,
almost
you
had that fifth.
Almost
had that on that play, which was a great play by the Cowboys defensive back.
I would not say when they get Sanu back and Dorsett back that they will be criminally underrepresented at wide receiver.
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a lot to look at yesterday and be disappointed with in the offense, in the sense that they had trouble getting the ball in the end zone. They didn't put together too many drives, but I would say that compared to the Philadelphia game, it was a huge step forward because Dallas has a pretty good defensive line, maybe not as good as Philly's, but a pretty good defensive line. And they did a good job containing him. Brady had more time to throw. They were depleted at wide receiver, so you have 2 rookies out there. And, you know, they were making some plays. The play to Harry was sort of one of those red zone connections that they've had trouble finding. The running game was, I'm surprised they didn't go to it a little bit more. The running game was tremendous. Averaging, you know, like what, like 4.5, somewhere around there, carries.
And they were able to finish out the game cranking out a first down with Michelle, which is something they hadn't been able to do with Newhouse at left tackle.
He was great. I mean, that was his best game of the year from I don't know if it was his most yards this year. He would have been over 90, and then he lost 4, I think, on his last carry.
Right.
But
and you pointed out on Twitter, and I want to bring this up on the pod, he had an MVP front runner, Russell Wilson, going to Philadelphia yesterday, completed 50% of his passes. They only scored 17 points. The Philadelphia defense, after they got the defensive backs back, are very good. Philadelphia is an excellent defense. Dallas, the weather. The Patriots scored 13 points. They missed two field goals. The offense, I'm not going to tell you it was fine. They did enough. They played well. And they played better than Dallas. That's what Bill would tell you. They made more plays.
Right. Sony averaged 4.3 per carry, which was slightly more than Elliott had. And that was another thing for this defense, was supposedly that the key to beating them was to just pound it away in the ground. But he had 4.1 per carry and 21 carries for 86 yards. He really didn't kill them.
Michelle and Elliott had identical games.
Very similar. I think with the exception that Michelle was, I think he played a little bit better because at the end they're looking for the run and, you know, he had that 4 yard loss at the end, but anyway, it doesn't, we're quibbling over it.
There was shades of the end of the Super Bowl when the Patriots cranking out first down after first down, the last drive that led to the Gostkowski field goal. They're going to be better with win.
All of a sudden, Michelle was put in the position to be the player that he can be.
He bounced a run to the right. He deked inside on Jalen Smith and bounced it outside. That was one of the best jump cuts you'll see all year.
And he had options, which is
Jordan Lewis is finding him. Brady back to throw, throws the ball deep.
Sorry, folks. I pulled up the page with I pulled up the box score from ESPN. And they just go ahead and play a video.
Special guest appearance from Brad Schimm from the Cowboys Radio Network.
Credit, please credit.
Kind of fitting that immediate should be named Schimm also.
So I don't know anything about Schimm. He could be great. Where were we here? Talking about Sony. Yeah, they put themselves in the position to put Sony in the position to play like Sony, and where he's got great vision, he makes good decisions, he's nice cuts. Look, he's not Barry Sanders, he's not Saquon Barkley, but the guy can get out there and make good decisions and keep the ball moving forward. He's great when he's going north-south, and he was able to do that throughout this game. We saw the player that he is. When
his ball security is terrific.
And after the game, Belichick has said he's played well all year. And I think we saw another play where there was some play action and Sony, you know, covered up like he had the ball and then popped up at the last second and picked up a blitz. And it was, he saved, you know, they didn't make a completion on the play, but he absolutely saved Brady from getting creamed.
And that's why he plays.
That's why he's there. Right. That's the difference between him and a guy like, you know, people, everybody looks at Nick Chubb. And by the way, our old friend Rashad Penny, who, you know, we talked about in an earlier episode, he had a big day yesterday. So
Natrone means body double, Rashad Penny.
All these guys are capable. They just have to get the opportunity. And, okay, so N'Keal Harry was back. He made that nice play. And N'Keal Harry, I'm kind of stuck on him because of this article that Chris Gasper wrote in the Globe where he talked about the Patriots mismanaging the receiver position. And he said in that article that N'Keal Harry was and I'm paraphrasing here in part, but he said that it was, well, the direct quote was, exigency over erudition, which is a really fancy way of saying nothing substantial and essentially dismissing the pick as a reach. At least that's how it reads to me. Now,
reading a Gasper article or a column is like a lobotomy in print form. It's empty calories everywhere, unnecessary words. He's emblematic of the terrible coverage that the Globe has of the Patriots. Between Sullivan and Mittens and Shaughnessy and him, the Globe is not worth. There's a reason why they're in the toilet.
I've known Chris for a long time.
My condolences.
Not particularly well, but I've known Chris to talk to for a long time, over a decade. He's very smart. And that comes across in his writing. But sometimes I'm
throwing the challenge flag on that, but go ahead.
Hold on, he's smart. And it does come across. I mean, exigency over erudition. There's some elegance in that expression. But when you
Soros.com gets used in the Gasper household, we get it.
I don't even know if he needs the thesaurus. He might just think this way. And but the substance of that statement is really dubious. And
there is no substance to that statement.
It comes back to, so he's trying to make this argument that Bill has mismanaged the position. However, the Patriots invested a number one pick in that position this year. And so
the last 2 years they've invested in the weapons position.
True. It's tough to say, but here's the problem when you're trying to write a column about mismanaging the wide receiver position. You have to acknowledge that sometimes players get hurt or something, like, you know, they go out and they get Antonio Brown, who was like perfect. Like, that's great management. Here's Antonio Brown. You can have him for $10 million. And within 11 days, all this personal life stuff comes out. He goes wacko, and, you know, now you have to cut him. Or you get Josh Gordon for a fifth-round draft pick. He gets suspended. He comes back from suspension, works his way all the way back, reportedly starts missing meetings. They can't put up with that, so they cut him. You look at guys, they tried to sign Adam Humphries. They outbid the Titans. Is that mismanagement when you outbid somebody else for the player? Adam Humphries, who I'll say by name, I won't just call him the player. But, okay, so walk you through this analysis. Now, they also invest a top pick in the receiver. He gets hurt. They get an undrafted receiver, okay, who, Jacoby Myers, who has become a part of this lineup. He is mostly coming off the bench, but yesterday, 4 catches for 75 yards.
Brady went out of his way to single him out.
This morning, Brady lavished praise on him. Well, you know, what you hear about Myers, now we've seen Myers make mistakes. We saw it in preseason. We saw him run the wrong route one time. We saw it last week against Philly. He ran the wrong route one time. But the thing that everyone says about Myers is that the guy is heavily invested in the playbook, that he really puts in the work. And, okay, sometimes he makes mistakes, but the guy has put in the work since day one, and Brady's observed that, and he talked about it on the radio this morning. Okay, so is it mismanagement when you have an undrafted free agent out there who's making all these catches? Okay, and then they traded Demaryius Thomas. You might call that mismanagement. However, what you did was, at the time, they just brought in Antonio Brown, so they didn't need Thomas. If you cut him, you lose $3 million because it's after week one. His salary is guaranteed. So what did they do? They traded him, got his salary off the books, got a sixth-round pick back. That sounds like pretty solid management to me. The decision basically comes down to they kept Myers and or Gunnar Olszewski over Thomas. Myers is averaging 9 yards per target. Thomas is averaging 7.8. So, okay, if they're, let's just say that all things, a pound for pound, let's just say that Thomas is playing about as well as Jacoby Myers is. Then you've got the cheaper guy there. You've saved $3 million in cap space. That's good management.
It's excellent management.
But when a player gets hurt, is that bad management? No. Now, so that raises an issue. Chris wrote this before N'Keal Harry had stepped on the field. Which means when you say exigency, i.e. desperation, over erudition, i.e. intelligence, that means you're saying that they reached for the guy, or that's my conclusion on it. You're saying that they made a desperate move. And, okay, go back and look at all the pre-draft analysis that was out there for N'Keal Harry. Was he ranked as like a third or fourth round receiver? No. Some people had him. A lot of people had him as a second rounder. The NFL draft profile thought he would go second round. Walter Football thought he would go second round. Bleacher Report said he could be top 15. So they took him at 32, which is the end of the first round. You're basically getting only one receiver had come off the board at that point. So they had their pick of their guy. If they wanted a receiver, they had every receiver except for Hollywood Brown. And Hollywood Brown probably didn't fit their the kind of receiver they're looking for because he's a small guy. I think he weighs like 165 pounds. The thing that's really attractive for a team like the Patriots with a N'Keal Harry is that he doesn't have that explosive speed, He's great after the catch. So you're looking to get the ball in his hands on these intermediate routes. He doesn't, now he doesn't gain much separation, but he doesn't need much separation.
He's a large man.
In a league where everybody is going as fast as possible in the defensive back positions, here's a receiver who can overpower those smaller, quicker defenders with his height, with his strength. He can just, we saw the back shoulder fade yesterday, making those boundary plays. That's one of his assets. And one thing we haven't really seen yet is that when he's got the ball in his hands, no, he's not the most explosive guy, but he's got some incredible moves. Hopefully we'll get a chance to see those because he showed them off in college and he can really pick up yards after the catch. You know, kind of like a great punt returner who makes people miss. And it's not necessarily about the blazing 4.3 type speed. It's about it being elusive. And so now, maybe N'Keal Harry will turn out to be terrible. Okay, maybe he can't play in the NFL. We'll find that out at some point. But to write that it's exigency over erudition before he has stepped on the field, and when there is no real credible argument that taking him at 32nd overall is a substantial reach, what are we doing here? How are you making that argument that this is indicative of some kind of mismanagement? It doesn't add up for me. And so, you know, let's go see what N'Keal Harry does. But I bring this up for a reason. And it's this. You got to watch what people are saying. People are trying to sell you on ideas. This is one that glosses over the explanation. Exigency over erudition. He does not go on to give some kind of substance that would back up those opinions. There's no fact to it. It's just, in my mind, that sentence is exigency over erudition. It is desperately trying to assign a label and describe something wrong about N'Keal Harry, because the argument fails if you don't. Because then the argument is, if you can't prove that there's something wrong with N'Keal Harry, a guy who has never stepped on the field, then your argument about mismanagement falls apart because they invested a top pick and then had the poor luck that he got hurt. That's not mismanagement. That's just an unfortunate development to happen in the training camp.
The other thing that Gasper glosses over, that's just exigency over idiocy as far as I'm concerned. If Harry works out, they have a guy on the outside at a quote-unquote weapons position, five-year contract, rookie scale, very reasonable. I would say right. That's actually pretty good management.
Well, there was that tweet yesterday. Somebody put this out there that they said, okay, the Cowboys used a late first-round pick on Amari Cooper. Their 2019 pick, they traded that to the Raiders for Amari Cooper. And listed all of his yardage. And then, you know, all of his stats from this year, he's having a great year. And then they said, and here's the Patriots used a late first round pick on N'Keal Harry, and here's what he's done, which is not a lot. It's only his second game today or yesterday. And so
Groundhog Day, you go back 2 years, Dave, 3 years, they were saying the same things about Malcolm Mitchell as they're saying about Jacoby Myers now.
Well, let me focus on this point about the late round draft pick, okay? It's a bit silly because, yes, Amari Cooper is currently having clearly a better year, and he's probably going to be for all time. I mean, if N'Keal Harry can play as well as Amari Cooper for the duration of his career, then the Patriots really hit the jackpot. That would be incredible. However, the Cowboys, they had to then go and sign Amari Cooper, right?
Yeah, he's a free agent at the end of the year, I believe.
At the end of this year? Did they give him a new contract? They only got like a year and a half of control for their first round pick. The Patriots get N'Keal Harry for up to 5 years if they choose to exercise their fifth year option. So to me, you have to look back in 5 years, and you have to look how much cap space does Dallas invest in Amari Cooper? How much production do they get in return per cap dollar spent? And then compare that to what N'Keal Harry does over 5 years and how much the Patriots spend on him, which will be considerably less if Amari Cooper pays plays that long. And Cooper's making almost $14 million this year. So I'm guessing that that has to be his – was that the fifth-year option price?
Fifth-year option, correct.
Wow, that's crazy. Because a couple
and
years
the Patriots, ago – And the Patriots have Mohamed Sanu basically made the same deal that the Cowboys did, giving up a lower draft pick. And Sanu's cap hit, they got – I believe the Patriots have a year and a half of control on Sanu, so it's the same thing. His cap number is much more manageable. Again, right, so, good management.
Right. So, you know, there's arguments to be made. The Patriots essentially made this this Amari Cooper trade with Brandon Cooks a couple years ago. There's a good argument for why you would do that. You know, you get an established player, and then the Patriots actually wound up dealing him to L.A. to get a higher first-round pick back. That was actually pretty outstanding.
A pick with interest when the mittens-wearing dullard said that he should be
turned
cut.
Turned into Isaiah Wynn. And saved cap space. So, but there's a good argument to be made. Like, this is not a terrible move by Dallas by any means. And I don't think it's a, I mean, how is it a bad move by the Patriots? We don't know yet. I mean, if N'Keal Harry's a bust, well, they wasted a first round pick. Maybe they should have gone out and traded for Amari Cooper. I just don't think we're there yet.
And the process is consistent. The Patriots do, they have a way they do things. Dallas has a way they do things as well. But it's being willfully ignorant if you're going to actually say the Patriots don't have a plan in place to deal with the stuff, because that's just wrong.
Right. And you know, another thing I keep hearing is like, why weren't they better prepared for injuries to the offensive line? And the problem is they went out and they signed two veterans, both of whom retired. Mm-hmm. They drafted two tackles, both of whom got hurt.
Damn you and your facts, sir.
Like, what else are you supposed to – like, what else is there you can do? And then they brought in Dan Skipper, who just never developed – I mean, think about this. They tried throughout the duration of camp while Isaiah Wynn was on the PUP list. They tried everything to get Dan Skipper all of the reps necessary to make him into – a guy who could become a depth lineman, a depth tackle, and it just didn't happen. Okay, so for all of the negative attention that's gone to Marshall Newhouse, who has not played particularly well, Dan Skipper couldn't even get to that level, and they tried. They tried to invest practice time and training camp into getting Dan Skipper there. They thought it could happen. It didn't.
Why is it so hard to acknowledge this? It's the low hanging fruit over and over and over again. It's just it's not even trolling. It's puddle depth analysis when you're saying that there's no management, there's no plan in place. It's just it's wrong.
And it's
the same tripe being propagated over and over again. There's nobody out there, Dave, in the media that's really giving this kind of overview that you're doing right now. Why is that? Because it's easier just to do the bullshit the other way.
We've had Evan Lazar on. I think Evan would echo a lot of my points if you asked him a question about how they've managed the receiver and the offensive line positions. I think one of the reasons that I get frustrated when I read something like that from Chris Gasper is because I do know the guy is smart. I do know he's capable of better. And I do know that that is not an analysis that's made in good faith. It starts with a lot of the material we see out there is it starts with the idea that something has to be criticized, and that's what the media is for, is holding people accountable, holding people in power accountable for things that they do wrong. And you know what? That is a good use of media when people in power make mistakes. Absolutely. Accountability, it's important. But the ability of the media to credibly live up to that role, not only and beyond sports, like we see it in politics all the time. On no matter what political party you are a member of, you can look at something you've read in the paper and go, or from some news source, and you go, they're not, this is not a fair analysis of what's happening out there. They're ignoring part of the story. They've decided to hold someone accountable without considering the full context of the issue. And when you do that, and we see all the time, I mean, people on the right, people on the left, they'll come and they'll tell you, the other side isn't playing fair. And I can't, people will say, oh, I can't watch Fox News. And people will say, oh, I can't watch MSNBC. And it's those organizations erode their own credibility. And the sports media probably does it more than anyone by choosing to be, by choosing to start from this point of negativity and be, you know, be somewhat trollish and to, by emphasizing, blowing up every minor issue into some kind of lapse in moral character or some kind of moral failing by the people who run the teams, it becomes, you're calling it Groundhog Day. Like, it just gets to a point where it loses its efficacy on the audience, and people start to look at it and go, it's almost like a boy who cried wolf scenario.
It's like, what are we even doing here?
They've lost the credibility, right?
We made the point earlier, the running game yesterday was much improved. Hyperlocal Harry, the newest resident of Las Vegas, he just pivoted to shitting on Shaq Mason. They were good yesterday. So Shaq Mason's a problem. It's predictable and sad. And there really is no differentiation at all, whether it be in print, whether it be on talk radio. They're all taking, it's, again, I'm repeating what
I said
earlier in last week. It's just talking points, inanity. It's really mind-numbing.
I wrote about the defense and how this was, you know, in my own way, I wrote about how this is a big win for them. It's a signature win. It really combats all of the things people have been saying who have doubted this offense, this defense all year. From what you've observed out there, and I don't think I don't follow the other media probably as closely as you do. Is anybody talking about how this was a huge accomplishment for this defense yesterday?
No, it's not. I mean, it's not. They shut down. That was the number one offense in football, as you referenced earlier, by yards metric, by DVOA. They're talented. You can just you do the overview. They have weapons at every level. That's a good football team, and they shut them right the hell down.
Right, and you know, I mean, you had the best defense versus the best offense. It would be the natural thing to report that the defense won. Like, that's a big deal.
When you have the best on its head, if N'Keal Harry had no catches yesterday, as Amari Cooper did, the sky's falling.
Yeah, I mean, Stephon Gilmore. How many articles are there about Gilmore today? I'm sure there's some. I'm sure it's out there, but
not nearly enough. Gilmore is the front runner for Defensive Player of the Year, and right now it's probably not close.
Well, to me, that game that he played yesterday was maybe the biggest story because Cooper might be the best receiver that he's lined up with. Cooper had no catches. Dak Prescott couldn't look at him. He threw a pass to Cooper that, I mean, on a route where you never see that ball get picked off the way he threw it. I mean, it was an insane catch by Gilmore. I mean, Gilmore was going to make a play on it, but to catch it, it was an incredible play. He almost pulled off another one in the end zone where he came off the receiver. He saw that the ball was just kind of thrown away. Almost made a heck of a catch for a second interception. I mean, what would it hurt for a lot? No. For the top guys in this market, the top guys, they're negative every week. There's no moment to pause and to appreciate.
They have the nuance of a cold sore.
If they win, I don't even know what that I mean. That those might be very nuanced for all I know. But what would it hurt them to come out with a story and be like, hey, what somebody's column? You know, if you're a Globe columnist or if you're opening up the microphone from 2 to 6 on Monday, what would it hurt you to come on and say, you know what? I was critical of Stephon Gilmore when they signed him. He has been money ever since that terrible first month. He's been the best defensive player in the NFL this year. And
he proved still it mumbling?
He proved it yesterday. What would that hurt? I don't understand it. And this is why, to me, it's all this negative sort of formula, is that if you're missing the greatness of what's happening on the field, when you're hyper-focused on these negative issues, on this, oh, well, the penalties caused the game, and, you know, the offense stinks. I'm not here to tell you that and by the way, I think that there were some pretty positive developments for the Patriots offense yesterday, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that this is an offense that, you know, that teams are going to be quote unquote scared of, that everybody's afraid to go play the Patriots offense. I don't think that that's the case. And I think they've got a lot of things they can build on and work with, but yeah, the offense is struggling right now. It's not playing its top game. They got some guys out. Some guys are struggling. Okay. But why are we ignoring the greatness of what's happening on the other side of the ball?
It's consistent with the Groundhog Day, Dave. It's an unprecedented two-decade run, the greatest run in the history of the sport. And they've done this with Bill the GM killing Bill the coach, having no plan in place, whatever bullshit phrase Gasper used. It's remarkable. It's right in front of us. The greatest run in the history of the sport. And as good as they've been for two decades, the media has been that bad. And the coverage is worsening. It's not getting better.
When Gilmore got here, everyone thought that money was supposed to be going to Malcolm Butler. And while Gilmore was among the – probably in the higher tier of free agents that year, defensive free agents, he was not a household name. He was not someone you've heard of. And there was a lot of confusion when they signed him. Like, what? They have Malcolm Butler. Why'd they just go dump a bunch of money on this other guy? And it's now a huge bargain what they're paying Stephon Gilmore. And where is the attention on Bill or on Belichick for making that move? He got it right. He picked everyone in the league had a shot to go sign Stephon Gilmore. Belichick got it done at a reasonable price, and he's become the best cornerback in the league. Who's talking about that?
Gilmore's first month with the team, they were comparing him being a bust to Monty Beisel in 2002.
It was awful. Any criticism of him during that first month was reasonable. There was nothing to defend. And he stood up and said it himself. He said, it's all on me. I need to fix it. He had a couple penalties that cost them against the Panthers. He played and oh my God, like so many coverage mistakes. It was a disaster, but it was about integrating into this defense and communication, learning. And one of the things, you know, talking to Kyle Van Noy, one of the things that's made this defense as good as it is that over time, they've all come to understand each other and can communicate, and they can communicate without much effort. They all know what everybody's doing on every play.
I think so, a lot of the empty suits that fill the seats around you in the press box are under the impression, just because they haven't improved their career-wise, that the players that they're witnessing aren't going to improve either, which is wrong.
Well, yeah, you've always got to account for improvement. I talked about this on Twitter too, like Damian Harris. Like, people always point to Damian Harris as like, what's up with that? Why isn't he playing? And if he does, like, I think what's going to happen is maybe Harris comes in someday and plays amazing. And everyone will think, well, why were they just sitting on gold all this time? And you know what? It may very well be that Damian Harris is working his way toward that point. And when he's ready to be that kind of player, they'll unleash him. Because it is an improvement. Okay, so they have another 5 weeks, 5 weeks worth of games before the postseason. That's a lot of time to take the guys that you have, hopefully heal some up, and put in the practice time to become better.
He's on the apprenticeship program that James White went through, that Stephen Ridley went through.
Yes. And I don't know if this offense is capable of becoming dominant or elite. But I look at this offense and say, this offense could become very solid. They've got the time to work that out. They've got to get everyone on the same page. And, you know, I look back at 2016.
Does the offense suck or does it blow?
Well, I look back at 2016 and when they lost Gronk, right? And who are your receivers at that point? You got Edelman, you got Amendola, you got Chris Hogan. And they were able to play pretty well with those guys. They had the diminished Martellus Bennett, whose production dropped 40% when he was hurt with both a shoulder and an ankle injury. James White was good, but they didn't have like the greatest name type receivers on the planet. But what had happened was they had all been playing together. Hogan was new that year. But over time, he became integrated in that offense. He had that great game against Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship. Mm-hmm. And everybody had kind of figured out what they were doing. And that was a product of continuity. What
pieces fit, and they knew how to play with each other.
Yes. And even though newer guys like Bennett and Hogan, that was about it. Like, that was all they had to do was go integrate those guys. The rest of the team had been playing together for a while. Well, now you look around, it's like every week they have a different lineup. Every week it's like, okay, Ben Watson's back. All right, they got Lacoste's back. You've got we're going to run our Harry, who's now in his second game. He's going to start. And Myers is going to start. He's an undrafted free agent. And they'll play with Edelman. And then we'll get Sanu. Sanu's like three games into his Patriots career. He's now out for a couple weeks. So he'll come back at some point. Dorsett, who has more time in this offense than anybody except for Edelman, as far as the receivers go, he's on the sideline, so eventually he'll come back. You know, and it's one of those things where they haven't really had the chance to develop that continuity and that familiarity. It's not necessarily about, look, I'm not saying these are the most skilled guys. Other than Edelman, you know, and maybe Harry has a lot of the tools there to become one of the most skilled guys, and actually Sanu's pretty good too. But they're not all, they don't, you know, these aren't AJ Green and Julio Jones and all these weapons type guys, Amari Cooper, you know, these aren't Pro Bowl guys. But you don't need those. What you need is to get everybody on the same page doing the same thing. You need the offensive line to block well. I always talk about 2006. They had the least skilled group of receivers they're ever going to have. They had probably their worst skill position core in the whole run. But you know what they did have? They had their offensive line. It played well. And Brady was able to move that team to the AFC Championship and, you know, come within probably one drop pass going to the Super Bowl and probably would have beat the Bears that year. So if you can just give Tom Brady some time, he's going to figure it out. Yesterday, he had some of that time, more so than he's had in a while. I think that's a step in the right direction. Yeah. Okay. Well,
what's going to help Brady as well? A better offensive line and a better running game. The team, the offense we saw against Philadelphia and against Dallas is not going to be the offense that we see at the end of December and in the playoffs.
Right. They're going to start figuring out where their strengths are and they're going to start playing into them. So, you know, and the defense has been tremendously healthy. The offense is not. And so,
when they lost Jason McCourty yesterday, they didn't miss a beat. They're so good. John Jones is so good, Dave. He's
really good.
J.C. Jackson, they have the small guys. They're well constructed on every level, and as you said, they play so well together.
And but maybe the good fortune, if there's some good fortune on the horizon for the Patriots, it's that all of their injuries have happened. that would be ideal for them because that's what happened last year. They got super healthy. You just started looking down at the inactives every week, and what would you see? You'd see guys like healthy Adrian Claiborne. You'd see healthy Danny Shelton. And you're going, well, these guys are football. These guys are NFL caliber guys. They don't get deactivated on Sunday when they're not hurt. Right. That means they've got a heck of a 50. They've got a heck of a 46 down in the field when Danny Shelton isn't one of them, and Adrian Claiborne isn't one of them, and those guys are healthy enough to play. So you know, maybe they'll get down to that point where you start looking at the inactives and you go, okay. You know, if you start looking at the inactive list and you say, that's an NFL caliber guy and he's healthy and he's not playing, that's when you know that you've got a pretty healthy group out there and a team that, that can compete with anybody. So, all right. Did we miss anything? Is there anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think we're good. It's a good win against a team with excellent personnel and a shitty, shitty coach.
Well, yeah, and then the rumor before yesterday's game was that the Giants were interested in Jason Garrett. Other than Jason Garrett's camp, I don't know who's putting that out there, but it doesn't really do the Giants aren't the kind of organization that likes to look like they're shopping for new coaches, so I don't know. I mean, it would be tampering if they did that, I think. So, I don't know. I hope they don't sign him. I think, like where the Giants have been the last 2 years, I mean, I agree that 8-8 is a better address, but I don't want to live there for 10 years. So
that's Jeff Fisher Street.
I don't want to live on Jeff Fisher Street.
Right.
Wherever Jeff Fisher lives, Jason Garrett's on the same street with like a slightly nicer house. And that's
Jeff Fisher went to a Super Bowl.
Right. That's even debatable because Fisher went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And then lived off it forever. Okay. So that brings us to the end of the program. I would be happy to ask all of you out there if you would go and rate us on iTunes, whether you like us or not. Go ahead and click that star button. It helps people find us. And you can email us. What's the email address, Mike?
It's entitledtown@gmail.com. Drop us a note.
Okay, very good. Sorry we got to you guys a little late today. Maybe you can tell from my voice I'm not feeling exactly 100%. So we held off recording last night, but we look forward to getting back at it next week. What are we on to next week?
First of all, outstanding mental toughness, Dave.
No, there was no mental toughness for me yesterday.
Getting through that Gasper column.
Well, the mental toughness for me was actually writing about 600 or 700 words and publishing them on the internet. That was a chore yesterday, and chore isn't the right word, but that was difficult. So there was no mental toughness coming out of me yesterday.
Profiles and courage, the Dave Brown edition.
Right.
We're on to Houston, Dave.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Mike. Take care, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.